All right, we've been going through the Gospel of John, and in the Gospel of John, we've seen that the focus has not been on Jesus' works or all the miracles that he did. It's been on the fact that Jesus is coming with a message from God. He's the Word. He's the Word of truth, and he's full of grace and truth, and he's come with a message about that grace and truth. The grace of God. And so in his ministry, we've seen a contrast between people that were interested in the works. They could see what that could do for them in terms of this life. They would love to be healed. They would love to be filled with bread that he had multiplied. But they weren't interested in being freed from sin. They weren't interested in receiving the grace of God and in knowing God. We found that many of the people actually rejected Jesus, that the religious leaders, they hated him. And Jesus told them that they loved man, but they hated God. And so, but there were some people that did love Christ. They were looking for a message. They did see that they were in darkness and they were looking for light. They did see that they were in condemnation and they were looking for salvation. They saw that they needed the grace of God. They wanted to know God better. Jesus said that they had been taught of God, and that every man that had learned of the Father would come to him, and those that came to him he would not cast out. And so they did. Those that had learned of the Father did indeed come to him. And now, as we have come to his final moments in his life, he's there with his disciples, those that have stuck with him through this, through his ministry, because they believed on him. They believed not just on the miracles, not just on the works, not that he was a miracle worker, not just someone coming working miracles from God, but they believed that he was the Son of God come with a message of grace and truth and light and life, and they wanted that. And so they believed on him, and they followed him now to his final hours. And in these final hours, it said, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. So he was with them in his last moments. And during this time, on the night of the Passover, the night in which he was betrayed, he's been speaking to them and giving them some exhortation, telling them about what's about to happen. He hasn't spoken a lot to them before on this, but he's been telling them a lot about what to expect. And so last time in chapter 15, we saw him tell them about how he was the true vine. We looked at how in the Old Testament, the vine represented Israel. But we saw in the Psalms that it said that there was going to be a time when the vine had turned into a degenerate plant of a strange vine, when it was no longer keeping what God had given to it, God was going to send judgment on it, its hedges were going to be broken down, and it was going to be burned with fire. And at that time it said that there would be a son of man that would be the man of God's right hand, that he would make strong for himself, and he would then be the salvation and deliverance for Israel, and no longer their vine. And so Jesus said he was the true vine, and he told his disciples, no longer can they trust in Judaism, no longer can they trust in the Old Testament religious system. They now need to trust in him. He is the true vine. It's only in him that Israel is saved. And so he admonished them to abide in him. He said, abide in me. And he said, abide in my love. They need to continue to do that which he loves, to be loved of him. And he said in order to do that, what they need to do is to keep his commandments, to keep in his word. He told them to continue in his word before. He said, if ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So now he tells them to keep the commandment that he gave them then. He gave them a commandment to love one and serve one another. And so he's told them to love and serve one another and bring forth fruit. And then if they ask of God, they'll ask what they will, and God will give it to them. He'll give them the Spirit. He'll give them that Spirit of truth that they've believed on this word, and that's through the Spirit that they're going to receive all these things that they believed on, that they're going to receive the grace, that they're going to receive the life, that they're going to receive the light. And so when they bring forth fruit and keep his commandments and love one another, then they will know the truth, and the truth will set them free. Then they will bring forth more fruit, he told them. He told them that those that bring forth fruit, the Father purges them, that they may bring forth more fruit. And so they'll receive that purging, that cleansing from the Spirit. And through that, he said, the Father will be glorified, and so shall they be his disciples. But he warned them that they need to abide in him and stay in him, because those that don't abide in him, those that continue to trust in the Old Testament, in Israel, those that don't bear fruit, those that are in the old degenerate vine, the strange vine, they will be destroyed. Men will gather them together and burn them, which is what happened in 70 AD. But those that do bear fruit, as they should, they will remain in the true vine, and they will receive the Spirit, they will know the truth, and they will be set free. They'll receive the end of their faith, the salvation of their souls. Now that doesn't mean that everything's going to be fine and dandy for them. Because they are still going to suffer persecution, he says. Just as the vine is going to be destroyed, just because they're in the true vine, doesn't mean that they're not going to suffer persecution. They are. Just because they won't be those that cut off and wither, that are gathered together and burned, doesn't mean that they won't have any trouble. But what they've been seeking is not just the physical kingdom, is not just physical, you know, to better be able to experience in this world of darkness. But they believed a message of grace and truth. They believed a message of a spiritual kingdom and spiritual cleansing, to become the children of God. And they will receive that. If they go back and stop following him, go back to the physical kingdom, to the strange vine, they'll be destroyed. They won't receive either the physical or the spiritual. But if they continue in his word, if they abide in him, they'll still suffer hatred and persecution of this world. But they'll receive the end of their faith. They'll receive that thing that they've believed on. They'll receive the spiritual cleansing. They'll be born again. They'll ask what they will, and God will do that unto them, that they might bring forth more fruit, that he might be glorified, that they might have all of the fullness of grace and truth, grace for grace. And so he told them, let them keep his commandments, and let them love one another. They are those that are going to receive this, that are going to bring forth much fruit, so they should love each other, knowing that each other are chosen of God to bear fruit, that their fruit should remain. And so they should love one another, knowing that also that the world will hate them and persecute them for this. And so that brings us to chapter 16, verse 1. These things have I spoken unto you, that ye should not be offended. So he's trying to prepare them for the fact that they're going to experience opposition and persecution. But he doesn't want that to offend them. He doesn't want that to sway their resolve. He doesn't want that to cause them to leave the faith, to stop keeping his word. He wants them to stand firm when it comes, knowing that it's expected that they're going to be persecuted just as he was persecuted. It's a token that they are following him and keeping his commandments, that they are bearing that fruit that he wants them to bear. Verse 2. They shall put you out of the synagogues. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God service. So they're going to be thrown out of the synagogues. They're going to be thrown out of the Jewish religion that what they're used to, out of the old system. And they'll even be killed, and those that kill them will think that they're doing so in the name of that religion, in the name of God. They're thinking that they're doing God service. Verse 3, and these things will they do unto you, because they have not known the Father, nor me. They aren't doing service to God when they do that. They're doing it because they've not known him. Those in the synagogues, in the Jewish religion that will persecute them, will say, just as they've said unto Christ, that they're the ones following God, and they're persecuting Christ because he's blaspheming. They'll do the same to them. But they're really doing it because they've not known God. They've not known the Father, nor the Son. They've rejected the Son when he came to declare the Father. Verse 4, but these things have I told you, that when the time shall come, ye may remember that I told you of them. And these things I said not unto you at the beginning, because I was with you. So he's telling them this now because he's about to leave, and he won't be present here to reassure them later. Up to now, he's been able to minister to them and comfort them, but he's not going to be able to do that, so he needs to prepare them ahead of time. And so they'll think back, they'll remember that he told them these things. And then they'll know that he knew what was coming for them when he left. And so they'll know that he will give them what they need to be able to go through it. That he promised to send that comforter, that they might be able to do the work of his Father, that his Father has to do for them. And so they will ask what they will, they'll ask for that comforter, and they have confidence that they'll receive it. Verse 5. But now I go my way to him that sent me, and none of you asketh me, whither goest thou? So we've seen that they've had trouble understanding a lot of what he said. He told them that they wouldn't understand it until later, and it seems that they still don't understand where he is going, and yet they're afraid to ask him. Verse 6. But because I have said these things unto you, sorrow hath filled your heart. And also despite him telling them not to let their heart be troubled, their hearts are sorrowful, because of what he's told them is about to happen, that he's about to leave. verse 7, "Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It's expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come to you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you." But he's told them before that they'd rejoice that he was going to the Father because his Father is greater than him. They should be rejoicing in that for his sake. But it's also expedient for them. Because if he doesn't go away, they won't receive the Comforter that he's told them of. But if he does go, then he'll send the Comforter unto them. In other words, having the Spirit of God inside of them is far better than having the physical presence of the Son of God himself. That same theme that we've seen through the entire Gospel of John, it's not just the physical presence of the Son of God, it's these spiritual things that they need, that they believed on. And so now that he is leaving, yes, that's sad for them, but he's going to return to them, the Spirit is going to come to them. And that's what they've believed on, ultimately. That's the ultimate fulfillment of that. And so they should, it's expedient for them, they should be rejoicing in this, not just for his sake, the Son getting to return to the Father, but for their own sakes, the Spirit coming into them and them becoming children of God. It's far better for them to have that presence of his Spirit than the physical presence. Right now, they can't have both of them. He has to leave so that he can send the Spirit. And so it's best for them, it's expedient, if he goes. Verse 8. "And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment." And it seems that it's also expedient for the world that they be filled with the Spirit. So it's in his best interest to go, and it's also expedient for them, and it's best for the world if he goes. Because the Spirit will testify, and it will reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. And he explains that, verse 9, "of sin, because they believed not on me." So he isn't coming to reprove them of sin, he's coming to free them from sin, his disciples, but those that believe not on him, the world, he'll reprove of sin. He'll reprove them for the sin and darkness and condemnation that they are in. As he said in John 3:18, "He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God." So they were in darkness, and they didn't want to come to him, the Son, as the light, and get their deeds reproved. But the Spirit's going to come, and he is going to reprove those that believe not on him, those that would not come to the light. They are going to be reproved of sin when the Spirit comes. And so it's expedient for the world that he come and reprove them. Verse 10, "of righteousness, because I go to my Father, and ye see me no more." So you'd think that the Spirit would reprove the world of sin, but of righteousness? Why would he reprove them of righteousness? But you see, even when the Spirit testifies of righteousness, it has nothing but reproof for the world. The Spirit speaks to the world only in reproof. It's not going to commend it for anything, it's going to reprove it of things. And not just reproving it of sin, but reproving it of all things, even reproving it of righteousness. When the Son was in the world, he was the light. He was showing the righteousness of God, but now he's going. He's going to his Father, and they'll see him no more. And so the Spirit's going to come and testify as to what is righteous and reprove the world of it. Because the world's standard of righteousness, the righteousness of religion, is not the righteousness of God. And they'll no longer be able to see Jesus here representing that, but he'll be gone, but the Spirit will come and reprove them of it. Verse 11, "of judgment, because the prince of this world is judged." So just as the world needs to be reproved of righteousness, they need to be reproved of judgment. They don't understand judgment, the judgment of God. They have their own standard of judgment, just as they have their own standard of righteousness. But he's going to testify, the Spirit's going to testify and reprove them of judgment. Because the prince of this world is judged. So the world better get acquainted with judgment, because that's what's coming for this world. The very prince of this world is going to be judged there. And they're in condemnation. They're going to eventually receive damnation, they're going to receive judgment. The prince of this world is judged, he'll have been judged already. And so That's what Jesus told them before that he's going to do. In John 12:31, he said, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." So the prince of this world already will have been judged and condemned and cast out. And that's a token of what is coming for the rest of the world, too. And so the Spirit will reprove them of judgment. They don't see that, they don't acknowledge that, but he's going to reprove them of the judgment of God that is coming. Jesus has said repeatedly that he came not to judge the world. But there is one that is about to be judged, he says here, and that's the prince of this world. So who is that? Who is the prince of this world? Well, we know that the Bible refers to Satan as the god of this world. In 2 Corinthians 4:4 it says, "In whom the god of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them." So Satan is the god of this world. He tries to keep the world in darkness, tries to block out the light of the glorious gospel of Christ. And so in Ephesians 6:12 it says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." So there's a god of this world and spiritual principalities, spiritual princes, rulers of the darkness of this world. And Paul said that we wrestle against them. He said that the god of this world still blinds men's minds. We still struggle against the princes of this world. So how can that be if the prince of this world was cast out and judged when Christ was lifted up? Who is the prince of this world that he's talking about? Paul speaks of the princes of this world in 1 Corinthians 2:6. He says, "Howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom, which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory." So the princes of this world, earthly rulers, earthly men who crucified Christ, they were in darkness, they were blinded by the god of this world, they couldn't see the wisdom of God. And so they crucified Christ because of that. As it is written, it says, "Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so the things of God knoweth no man, but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God." So just as Jesus has been telling them here, it's through the Spirit of God that we have wisdom, which those of this world, the princes of this world, of the Spirit of this world, they could not understand. But Jesus has told his disciples here that they will understand it. So who is this prince of this world then, that Jesus was speaking of here? Who is this one who knew not the wisdom of God and would crucify the Lord of glory? One who had the spirit of this world, of the god of this world. One who Jesus said would be cast out when he was lifted up. One who Jesus said was about to come and have nothing in him. In John 14:30 he said, "Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me." It was someone who was not clean, who had no part with him, who was coming there to meet him then, and had nothing in him, had no part in him. He was his disciple, who Christ said was a devil. He said of Judas in 13:27, "And after the sop, Satan entered into him. Then said Jesus unto him, That thou doest, do quickly." And so he did. He came and betrayed Christ to be crucified, but he was cast out and judged and fell headlong, and all his bowels gushed out. Being filled with the god of this world, he was the prince of this world. And in his judgment represents the judgment of Satan and the Antichrist. And he received judgment right there at the same time that Jesus was crucified. And the rest of this world will receive the same fate. And so when the Spirit comes, he'll reprove the world of that judgment. The judgment of those that come to Christ seeing the miracles, that come to religion and do not come to a belief in the Word, that Word of light. Judas saw the miracles, he heard the word, but he wouldn't believe it, he wouldn't continue in it and be his disciple indeed. And so the Spirit, when he comes into those who are his disciples indeed, he'll reprove the world of judgment, the judgment of those who do not. Verse 12. I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now. And that's pretty clear that they can't, they just can't understand it right now. But there are many things that he does have to say. Verse 13, howbeit when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. So but the Spirit of truth, who he will send to testify, he will speak the word of the Son to them. He'll hear the word of the Son, and he'll speak it to them, just as the Son has only spoken what he heard of the Father. So the Spirit is only going to speak what he has heard of the Son. And he will guide them into all truth. As he said, he'll remind them of the things which he's already told them, and he'll tell them those things that they cannot bear now, that he would like to tell them, but he just can't yet. And so he will tell them all things, guide them into all of that truth that Jesus wanted to declare, but couldn't fully declare it yet. And he will even show them things to come, reprove the world of judgment. Christ has hinted here about things to come, about the judgment that is coming, about how he's going to return from the Father one day. But they haven't understood, and he hasn't fully revealed it yet, but he will. The Spirit will reprove the world of judgment. One day, John is also going to write not just this gospel, but the book of Revelation. Verse 14, he shall glorify me, for he shall receive of mine, and shall show it unto you. So just as the Son has sought the Father's glory, so the Spirit is going to seek the Son's glory. Because just as the Son has received these things of the Father, so the Spirit will receive of the Son these things and show it to them. Verse 15, all things that the Father hath are mine. Therefore said I that he shall take of mine and shall show it unto you. So we notice now that rather than this being taken from the Father and shown unto them, as the Son has done, now the Spirit is taken from the Son and showing unto them. The Spirit will glorify the Son, he'll speak of the Son, because all things of God are the Son's. The Son is full of grace and truth, grace for grace. Every grace of God, every truth of God is found in Jesus Christ. And so the Spirit, when he comes, can indeed reveal all things to them from the Son, because the Father has committed all things unto the Son. Verse 16, a little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me, because I go to the Father. So as he's told them many times, he's going to the Father. And so it's just a little while, and then they'll see him no more. But now he adds something. He now says that it'll be a little while after that, and then they will see him, because he's going to the Father. Verse 17. Then said some of his disciples among themselves, what is this that he saith unto us, a little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me, and because I go to the Father? They said, therefore, what is this that he saith, a little while? We cannot tell what he saith. Now Jesus knew that they were desirous to ask him, and said unto him, do ye inquire among yourselves at that I said, a little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me? Verily I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice, and ye shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall be turned into joy. So they're going to sorrow at his death, while the world rejoices. But their sorrow will be turned to joy when he rises again. Verse 21. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow, because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish, for joy that a man is born into the world. And ye now therefore have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart shall rejoice, and your joy no man taketh from you. So in a sense, Christ is about to be born again. He's about to take on a new life in the resurrection. And they, his disciples of Israel, of the true vine, they're like a woman in travail, as Israel is compared to a woman in the Old Testament. They're going to have sorrow now, during this time, when Christ dies and rises again. But when the child is delivered, when Christ is risen, they'll forget the anguish for joy. Their heart will rejoice when they see him again, and their joy no man taketh from them. Because no man can take his life, as he said, he lays it down of himself. And so he's going to rise again and go to the Father and send them the Comforter, and they will have him forever, abide with them forever, that their joy might be full. Verse 23, and in that day ye shall ask me nothing. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it you. So no man can take their joy from them, because their joy will not be bound up in his physical presence. They won't need to ask him anything to have their joy fulfilled. They'll be able to ask the Father in heaven directly. And whatsoever they ask the Father in his name, he will give it them. He will give them the Comforter, that they might be filled with the joy of the Holy Ghost. Verse 24. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask, and ye shall receive, that your joy might be full. So let them ask for that grace, for that knowledge, for that truth, to know God. Let them ask for that Comforter to come to them. And when they ask the Father for it in his name, they'll receive it, that their joy may be full. They will joy in the Holy Ghost, in the Spirit, and not in Christ's physical presence. And so their joy no man can take from them, because it's in the Spirit of God inside of them that abides with them forever that gives them that joy. Verse 25. These things have I spoken unto you in Proverbs, but the time cometh when I shall no more speak unto you in Proverbs, but I shall show you plainly of the Father. So he has said some things here that aren't perfectly clear, that he knows that they cannot fully comprehend. But the time will come when he won't speak to them in Proverbs anymore, when they will clearly comprehend, when he'll show them plainly of the Father, when he'll come to them and abide with them forever, even the Spirit of truth. And so let them ask for that full knowledge, for that full comprehension, because in that day, when they ask, they will receive it. Verse 26. At that day ye shall ask in my name, and I say not unto you that I will pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loveth you, because ye have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. So they asked now to see the Father. Remember how Philip asked a few chapters back, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. And yet he hasn't given them that full comprehension here. But at that day they will ask again in his name. They'll ask not him, but his Father himself. And the Father will show himself to them. He will come and abide in them forever. And Jesus isn't saying that his Father is going to do that just because he is going to go to him and persuade him to. Because when he goes to him, he will ask him. No, but the Father himself loves them, because they have loved the Son and believed him, believed that he came out from God. And so, without the Son's prompting, the Father himself loves them and will answer them, and direct the Son to send them the Comforter, the Spirit of Truth, that they might know the fullness of God, and have fullness of joy, all fullness of grace and truth, grace for grace. Verse 28. I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world. Again I leave the world, and go to the Father. So he says it again very plainly. They believed that he came from God. That's why the Father loves them. Well, he came forth from the Father into the world, and now he's leaving the world and returning to the Father, so believe him on that too. Now he's going back. Verse 29. His disciples said unto him, Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speakest no proverb. Now are we sure that thou knowest all things, and eatest not that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God. So they said, That sufficeth us. Now we are sure that thou knowest all things, and need not to ask you for anything else. That knowledge that you've just given us, that you know it all, that's enough. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God. I kind of thought they already believed that. I thought he just said that they believed that. But and they did, but now they hear his word again, and they believe it all over again. And having heard that word, they believe that's enough. That's so wonderful that that's just enough for them. That's all that they need to know. Just knowing that Jesus knows it all, that he came from God, is enough for them. But Jesus has told them that they're going to receive a fuller knowledge of God, that they might know all things, that their joy might be full. Their joy is not full yet. They're still troubled, but it will be. Verse 31. Jesus answered them, Do ye now believe? Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, but the Father is with me. So they just now professed belief once again. And yet as he told them, one of them will deny him, and all of them are going to be scattered and leave him alone. But he won't be truly alone, because his Father is with him. Verse 33, These things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. So they're going to have trouble. In the world they're going to have tribulation. They're going to be persecuted. But they have peace in his word, because he has overcome the world. And so in his word they have hope, a promise, that they'll not only see him again, but that they too will overcome the world, that they too will be not of the world, just as he is not of the world, that they'll ask the Father, and they'll receive the Spirit of truth, for that the Lord is gracious. They will have him in them who overcame the world. And so, even though they have tribulation, yet they will have peace. They'll be filled with the fullness of joy, the fullness of the grace and truth of God, grace for grace. And so that's going to conclude for today, and I guess we'll do 17 next time, and maybe 18, we'll see. A lot of times when I just read through these passages, you can kind of follow it a little bit, but you know when he says, I speak unto you in Proverbs, some of it's not always easy to follow exactly when you're just reading through it, you know, the flow of it. So I felt like I understood a little better after studying through it and kind of comprehended a little better.
Yeah.
I didn't do as many word studies. I didn't, like, do a word study on that. In the book of John, I didn't do as many of those because it breaks up the flow some, and I wanted to kind of keep... So it was a lot, kind of a lot different than the other things I've done, so taught through so far. I mean, I did some, but I didn't include all of it. When I was teaching through it, I just... So that I would understand what it, you know, what it means, but then I didn't give all the background of why it means that in some cases, I guess.